Hey everyone, before we get started, today's podcast is brought to you by No Halftime, a great app for one-on-one challenges in the DFS space. They cover all sports, so you take a player you like on a certain slate, let's say basketball, tonight you want to go Russell Westbrook and you think he's going to outscore, I don't know, maybe, unfortunately, No Halftime doesn't let you add two players up together, but you want to do what Russell Westbrook versus Carmelo Anthony and see if anyone wants to accept that challenge. You go over to No Halftime, you download the app in the App Store, you use promo code DFSR to get yourself started, and you're all good to go. So go check out No Halftime. It's the perfect way to settle the hash of anyone that you're watching a game with on a given night. Covers all sports, nohalftime.com. Download in the App Store, DFSR promo code. All right, let's get it on. All right, you're back in the DFSR here with our NBA podcast for Thursday, October 19th. I'm Doug Norrie. That is
James Davis
from DailyFantasySportsRankings.com, coming off another successful night in the NBA. Season rolling just the way we wanted it at the start. Short of the Gordon Hayward injury on Tuesday, Wednesday night in the NBA for us, excellent. Just as we picked out a couple of, it's funny. Do you remember seeing a situation? I didn't even give you the promo here, but who cares? Because I love talking about NBA so much. We're from DFSR.com, by the way. Just go over there.
DFSR.com/NBA. You can check out our product that keeps winning over and over again and was completely dominant at the beginning of last year, too, while we have more information than everyone else. Go ahead, Doug.
Okay, so last night, do you remember a situation where, we had a problem with FanDuel at the end of last year where the pricing just got completely crazy and we were just getting like the Tyler Ulysses of the world at like 90% starts. Mm-hmm. And it was really becoming a situation where you were instead of playing like a full roster, you were basically playing like 3-on-3 for 50-50s, yep. Right? Like you were kind of saying, nah, take these three guys, you have these three guys. Last night, we got there night two on FanDuel. Giannis over 80%, Lillard over 80%, Tatum and Brown over, I think they were like close to 90% as well. Do you remember a situation like this early in the season? Do you think this information gap is just kind of becoming smaller and smaller as we go? As a point of story here, the reason I got into DFS was like way back in the day. I remember going over to Draft Street and playing, and like 50% of people had played. I wasn't even following basketball at this point. 50% of people were playing like Mason Plumlee or something like that. And I was like, oh man, someone knows something that I don't. Now we're seeing, and that's what incentivized me to like just build this entire system and for us to kind of build this business is really kind of off that like one night, I would say. That was like the defining moment for me in understanding that people knew things I didn't, and I wanted to be the one that who knew. Do you think that now we're getting into this place where like the information gap is so small that we're just going to continue seeing these kind of ownership percentages in the NBA going forward? This kind of 50% of a lineup having 80% over ownership of the second night of NBA kind of tells me that the industry has shifted here.
Yeah, I think that's right. I mean, I think at this point, if you're not using actual tools, if you're going on your gut, if you're looking at, just some lineup, you're looking at FanDuel and you're like, all right, well, I know I want Westbrook at point guard plus. And then like you go through building lineups the way we quaintly did in the old days when we would have to walk uphill 20 miles both ways in the snow just to set our DFS lineups, then you're just, it's like akin to going and playing baseball at the local park without a baseball glove. Like you just show up and you're like, all right, guys, I'm on the team. And they're like, you're just going to play with your bare hands. And you're like, yep, that's what I'm going to do. And like, you won't, it won't be obvious the whole time that you're totally a fish out of water and ill-equipped to do what you're supposed to do. But over time, you will cost yourself a significant amount of edge. And I think that if you can't calculate quickly, like when news comes in at the last second, we haven't even gotten to that point in the season. Like that really hasn't played a role yet. But yeah, if you can't pick out these punts, if you don't know how to make the money work so that you get all of them, last night you needed Lamb, Brown, and Tatum. And if you didn't have those guys and you didn't have Lillard, like you had basically already lost. And that's a really tough hurdle to climb because yeah, sure, each of them in and of themselves is only about an 80% start. But as I was going through and poking through lineups, just trying to find some sanity and why those guys weren't actual 100% starts, you started seeing that it wasn't that a lot of players could play one or the other. It was that the smart people played all of them. And then the people that were just like showing up being like, hey, basketball season, I'm going to go try my hand at DFS. Like those people just played none of them. So it's really people getting churned up right now. And it's a crazy landscape. If you are a total casual player, like you will just definitely lose. But if you use our system, or if you know what you're doing, or you had some system you use, I think right now, the beginning of the season, is the time where it's the biggest edge we can have as haves versus the have-nots, because the information isn't quite as obvious, and we just have experts like us. And I'm not trying to toot our own horn, just being honest. Like, I'll be honest when we don't do well also, when we have experts like us breaking it all down. So yeah, right now, huge edge, huge ownership percentages, and that will be the case until all this craziness sorts itself out.
Yeah, I forgot about LAMP too. So you're looking at like 60% of cash lineups just basically employing those guys. Excuse me, the lineups were employing 60% of all the same guys. And then,
You said Lillard too, right? 90%.
That was,
Crazy.
the separation we had was basically like Oladipo, a little bit of Gobert, and Ben Simmons, who even he was like 60%. So it's like, it's really tough to, I think that some of this will kind of even out as the pricing catches up. That FanDuel is a little slow with pricing. We've seen that. And it could be that Tatum and guys like Tatum and Lamb and Brown, whose their roles aren't going to stand a change too much, continue to come in the lower pricing scale. DraftKings is it's a totally separate issue. DraftKings pricing much tighter. Both lineups there are good too, but you need to just have a different. DraftKings arguably or is harder. They're both. Here's the thing. They're both very difficult, but for different reasons. And we're going to get into today's games here in a second. But DraftKings and FanDuel are both hard, but they're hard for different reasons, and they're hard for reasons that like don't always like coagulate with each other. FanDuel is hard because of the ownership percentage I just talked about. People will feel like that is easy because they'll say these plays are so easy. Who could not play them? Like who's not going to play these guys? And so FanDuel feels like everyone walks into the night feeling like their FanDuel lineup is great. And then, but basically your edges are the margins are so thin because, like I said, you're trying to figure out how you're going to win a 3-on-3 heads up matchup against all the guys that, the three guys that you weren't universal plays. DraftKings, totally different story. Between the multi-position eligibility and the pricing being much tighter, where you're not going to get that same kind of overlap in terms of ownership, you really there you just have to be optimizing. And actually, and a lot of times, as we even saw last night, you might be optimizing to a lineup that doesn't look all that great. Like we had this problem last night. We thought Gortat, oof, like this is going to be a weird one. Horford, Dwayne Bacon, right? Like guys like this, it's just not going to be that great to look at. But what you're fighting with there is it's very hard. Everyone's DraftKings thing is going to be like that. It's going to be difficult to make lineups together because there's just so many permutations of the pricing insider. So both difficult, but difficult for different reasons. All in all, good start to the beginning of the season. Looking forward. It's completely killing me that I'm in a state right and visiting a state right now where DFS is banned. And so it's been a little thorn in my side here to start the year. Anyway, let's get into a three-game slate of NBA action. Man, there are some bad teams playing today to start the season. Most notably, the Bulls. I mean, the Bulls—they're over under prop for wins this year was 22 going in. Is there any way you see this Bulls team reaching 22 wins?
Well, they shouldn't get off to a good start in this game anyway. Going up against Toronto, they're 12.5 point underdogs. I think if you're routinely 12.5 point underdogs, it's a little bit awkward, when you all get everyone out on the court. And you're just like looking at each other, and it's like I'm sure you've gone and played pickup where, like for some reason, it's like four guys that all showed up together, and they all want to be on the same team. And you just look at their guys, and you look at your guys, and you're like, really? Are we going to spend half an hour doing this? Like, or can we just make fair teams now? I think that's kind of how this Bulls game is going to shake up. It's like, like when they're doing their thing where everyone stands around getting ready for the jump. It's like Jerry and Grant up against Kyle Lowry. You got Norman Powell. And DeMar DeRozan, and then on the other side you've got like Justin Holiday. Like it's just gonna it's an embarrassing situation. I just feel bad for everyone involved, frankly. And I, like most people, I'm hoping this is over as quickly as
Well,
possible.
maybe even more embarrassing by the other day, Bobby. I would love to be have been a fly on the wall of what started this fight. But Bobby, and it's not funny.
Oh, Portis
It's
and
not funny that he got
Marotic.
hurt and had to go to the hospital. That part's not funny. But Portis punches out Mrotić, and now Mrotić is out for like. I mean, he broke his face basically, and he's out for at least a month with a broken face. Portis is
Portis suspended 8 games.
Eight games. They were already without Zach LaVine, who they traded for because he's still returning from the ACL. They lost Chris Dunn in the preseason. They don't have Cameron Payne. They don't really have anybody. They don't even have a full NBA squad. They really barely have a D League squad, really, after you lose all of these guys. Look, the Bulls are, this is the thing with DFS. The Bulls are bad. We know this. Now, That being said, there's still 48 minutes in a basketball game, and players on the Bulls are going to be out there for 48 minutes running toward balls and heaving up shots from God only knows where. Is there value here with this Bulls team? They're maybe in the front court, they're without their two power forwards. I mean, Meredith and Portis were basically supposed to rotate minutes here. Markkanen is there. Is there value still to be had in a situation that's a train wreck's train wreck?
I'm having trouble finding it, honestly. I mean, Markkanen starts the season priced at 6,500, kind of inexplicably in my mind. So no, I mean, you can absolutely not play him at that price. I guess you can go, like, we did see some life out of Zipser last year, I guess. But look, the Bulls guys, like, this is like the weird thing. The thing I'd love to write the FanDuel people about is, like, what was with the pricing on the Celtics guy last night and then these Bulls player tonight? Like, Jerry and Grant's 6,600 to start the season? Like, that's insane. None of these guys are going to be this expensive in like a week, I would hope, or this whole team is just going to be fully unplayable. I think if you're going to try to get some value off the Bulls, you're probably going to have to go down to like maybe Felicio if he winds up starting for some reason. But otherwise, I mean, it's kind of odd because none of these guys are expensive, but they're just not exactly cheap either. So yeah, I guess Zipser would be the only guy I would really look at. Everyone else, I just don't, even on a 3-game slate, which is really saying something, it's hard to find anyone to be excited at all about on this team.
You know, we audit we go team by team audits to make sure that we have correct possession attempts and minute projection for each team. It's really the only way to get like drill down on accuracy. It's the biggest. I'm not giving any way secrets here. Anyone that's smart with this is what you have to do. And if you're not doing it, you're just completely behind the eight ball in terms of like what you see a team doing on a night to night basis. Now, right now, we are a full 35 minutes low. Excuse me, 25 minutes low on the Bulls. Now, it's one of those things like where do you take it up? There's going to be some guys that are going to get minutes that we didn't really expect. Yep. It does seem like their starters are probably going to have to play, like guys like Zipser. I mean, if Zipser got would it shock you for Zipser to get 35 minutes here? I mean, he can kind of move back and forth between small ball four and the three. They don't have anybody. He, like you said, he does show signs of life. I mean, 35 minutes out of him is a completely out of the realm of expectation.
It's not, but again, why do you want to be the one who guesses that? That's my big question. Like, yeah, sure, any of these guys, Justin Holiday could play 38 minutes, Robin, we kind of see what he can do. But even guys like Jarrell Eddie or Diamond Stone, you know, like just random dudes that like, nobody can project for any production. Ryan Arcidiacono, you know, like all these guys, we just have actual no clue. This team is so different and so bad, anything is possible. And I think, you know, there's kind of two different parts about making projections. You know, the minute-by-minute thing is really important and being as accurate as possible. But sometimes you want to err on the side of, you know, certainty. And I think in the case of the Bulls, given how uncertain the situation is, it's just not profitable to, like for me personally, as I'm looking at the slate, it's not profitable for me to try to guess who's going to get all the minutes because I could average it all out. I don't think that's very scientific. I could pick a winner. I don't think that's very scientific based on the news we have, because when it all comes down to it, am I ever going to want to play any of these guys at, you know, let's say 6,500 over a guy like Patrick Beverley, who I just know is a good player who's going to start for his team? No. So what? You know, like, I just don't know why. I don't know why I would go there with zero information. Now, after this game, if it's a relatively normal game script, which it never will be with terrible teams, that's the other big problem here. We'll know a little bit more. But really on the Bulls, I'm waiting 5-6 games into the season, you know, when they've maybe taken 5 or 6 20-point beatings in a row. But then I can actually see what their plan is in that case. When they look at each other and they're like, well, if we're going to lose by 20 every game, we can't just sit our starters every game, right? Like, somebody has to go out there and play. So, yeah, right now, who knows on the Bulls? We are definitely underprojected on them, and that's by design, not by accident.
On the flip side of the ball, you know, you mentioned that there's blowout risk here, 12.5-point favorites for Toronto going into this game. Now, we have that issue with two of the games with potential blowouts between Toronto and Oklahoma City. Yep. In blowout situations like this, we've seen Toronto. I mean, Toronto is we're gifted a little bit here with Toronto in that they're returning basically the same team as they had last year, right? Like, for all the offseason movement, there are about 6 or 7, or maybe 4 or 5 good teams, and I'll put Raptors in this group, and you know, Wizards fall into this group too, of teams that were good last season and are basically the same as they were last year. Toronto is the case here. Now, they did add CJ Miles, who's going to replace Damari Carroll, though it's unclear if he's going to start. It might be Norman Powell starting. How do you view the Raptors in a possible blowout situation? Do you think that ends up that they're kind of fairly priced because we just know about this team already? And, you know, where do we end up wanting to play any of these guys?
Yeah, it's two interesting things on the Raptors. So first of all, they barely ever blow any teams out. From Christmas on last year, they had two games. They won by 16 points or more. So this is just, I get that they're projected to win by a lot here, but this isn't a team that is necessarily built to just run up the score. They don't play a very fast pace. They haven't historically been a huge team in transition. So, right away, I don't worry about it as much with them as I do with other teams. And then you look at the nature of the blowouts that they actually did engage in. They beat Brooklyn by 20 points on January 13th. Kyle Lowry played 36 minutes. They lost to Charlotte by 35 points on January 20th, and Kyle Lowry played 35 minutes. I think for their team, they maybe shave a couple minutes off right at the end, but they're not like one of these teams like Golden State or maybe Cleveland. Yeah, they beat Milwaukee by 25 points. Lowry played 36 minutes in the playoffs. They're not one of these teams that tends to rest their starters starting the fourth quarter or anything like that. So I think it matters less for them. And we've talked about this in past seasons, but if you're new to the NBA, blowout risk matters less on small slates, or we account for it less on small slates because typically the team that's, especially the team that's on the favored side of the blowout, oftentimes that's where a lot of your really good plays are. So that's not actually necessarily the case tonight. Toronto, we're targeting more of the cheaper guys, but if it were the case, like Oklahoma City, we'll get to them in a second. They're favored by just as many points, and it's really hard to make a credible lineup without touching that game either, right? So you can't just stack the Clippers Lakers game and hope to get away with it. So yeah, I'm kind of ignoring the blowout here for this game, weighing it a little bit more seriously for OKC, but by and large, I'm just looking at individual plays and trying to hit the middle with projecting their minutes.
Yeah, Norman Powell is a decent price if he gets the start on FanDuel, though it's worth noting that when he plays with Lowry and DeRozan, that the usage for him goes down pretty dramatically, right? It's like when he was
Yep,
replacing
of course.
DeRozan that we saw a usage bump for Powell. When he plays a three in that lineup, he does not get nearly as many shots. One interesting thing I'm going to keep an eye out for this season is what DeRozan shot more three-pointers in the preseason. I get that it's the preseason, so I'm not like going to make any changes on his base projection based on this, but if he was shooting significantly more per minute threes during it, going into this year, if that is a change for him, which will be interesting to see, I can see a projection and overhaul, a slight overhaul on him if that was going to be his new game plan going forward. I mean, traditionally he's the two guard that just doesn't shoot a three pointer. Like it's all kind of like in the lane pull up stuff. He's really good at that, like that mid range game stuff. He's like among the best in the whole league at. But if he starts to shift as he probably should to shooting more threes, I think we could see more scoring opportunities out of him, though we probably see a dip in field goal percentage as well. Lowry's a good price on DraftKings, 7,500. Love the minutes, or excuse me, 7,900. But you do love the minutes on a high usage guy. Ibaka qualifying at center on DraftKings actually really helps too, so at 5,400. So some interesting plays. Worried about the blowout a little bit, but you put it pretty well about how we can't really sweat it too hard on a three-game slate. Speaking of train wrecks, the Knicks, not in the same category. They're like on the track still, but the train isn't really running all that well. Like the Bulls train has fallen off the track, is in a ditch, is probably on fire, and there's like a meteor headed toward it
I
too. So
agree.
like it's going all bad for the Bulls. The Knicks at least have Porzingis on their team.
Damning
They
with faint
do.
praise, yeah.
I say that, but. Well, they have him. They didn't do anything to add anything around him. I mean, they signed. I can't even get these guys out. They signed Ron Baker. They signed Ron Baker to a contract, inexplicably, in a year where there was just a ton of different point guards you could have signed. That was the guy they kind of hitched a small wagon to. And then they signed Ramon Sessions. They gave Tim Hardaway nearly a max contract. I can't even talk about this team. Like the Knicks are so bad. Where do you see the Knicks team in terms of fantasy production right now? And then we can talk about OKC.
Yeah, I think the Knicks have something to bring to this slate, which is more than we'll be able to say for them probably on future slates. But yeah, there's some guys you can consider here. I mean, you pointed out Porzingis. I think Willie Hernangómez, kind of interesting center play tonight, if only just because center is so thin. As you kind of look at some of the names that one would consider here, basically you can decide between him and Jonas Valanciunas heads up, or you can start paying up for guys in somewhat speculative or new situations like DeAndre Jordan, Brook Lopez on the Lakers. So I don't mind Hernangómez. I think it's a little bit speculative at this point. I think that maybe it's more of a big tournament play than a safe feeling cash game play. I do think Porzingis will be very highly owned. He's inheriting the whole load now from Carmelo Anthony. Any semblance of usage guys that had been on the team are no longer there. Hardaway Jr. maybe slots into that role. I mean, we certainly saw him shoulder a bigger role with Atlanta at the end of last season, but you know, who knows? I mean, I think given that they gave him a big contract, like he stands to play rather large minutes and probably take on some decent degree of usage. He was pretty solid on these prices, you know, as a high minutes guy on Atlanta, but I don't know if we can count on him for the 35 to 40 minutes even that he was playing in the playoffs in some instances last year. So Hardaway Jr., kind of an unknown that I'd be willing to take a risk on. Hernan Gomez, kind of an unknown that feels a little riskier to me for cash games. And then Porzingis just seems like solid cash gameplay.
I think there will be times the Knicks, like with this group of guys, are able to put it together and hang with teams. I mean, like, so they're not a laughing stock of the team. They have guys. They have. Well, I don't think they're going to be
They'll
good.
be able to hang
Don't
with
get me
like the
wrong.
Bulls for sure.
Nah, they're, I mean, they're better. They're much better than the Bulls. I mean, like the fact that like they're bringing also going to bring guys like Beasley and Cantor off the bench. These guys at least have played
Yeah,
in the
true.
NBA. They're not good. They're not going to hang with any of the good teams that get gifted here. That they're going to be able to play in the East. So, you know, they're still facing. There's a lot of bad. Let me put it this way. It's more just this. There's a lot of bad East teams, and they're going to get to play those teams. And I think those games, you're going to get like good Hardaway shooting nights. Porzingis is a star, like you know. So that's more than some other teams can say. All that being said, they're still crazy underdogs here. I think Porzingis is probably the chalk, and I'm going to be really interested to see how some of their usage things play out for the rest of these guys because yeah, I mean guys like McDermott they can shoot but and we could see that they consolidate some of the minutes going forward but it's going to take a game to get there. OKC, they were one of the big offseason teams in terms of player movement. They signed or excuse me they trade for Paul George. They give nothing away for Paul George and then they sign and they give almost even less than nothing away for Melo. That really They gave things away in the sense that they gave away some depth off their bench, and that does factor in somewhat. But now they have these three guys, the three superstar types, on their team. How do you think it cuts into a season, you know, a historic season we just saw from Westbrook, where he was basically the safest, most expensive player you could play on a night-to-night basis? He and Harden Westbrook's average FanDuel price last year was $12,500, you know, average for the whole season, which is completely nuts. And he was still, even on that price, was the third most consistent overall NBA player on a night-to-night basis. How much do you think, one, we see his salary maybe, do we see it getting back to that 12? I mean, it's only 11.8 now. Two, how do you think the addition of these guys cuts into his overall fantasy production?
I mean, it's really hard to say. I think a reasonable thing to look at would be his production with Durant, which was still totally in line with these prices. I think Melo, you know, we've saw his minutes kind of waver as he's been getting older. I think we could see him playing something like low 30s minutes per game. Paul George has been a minutes horse in the past and, you know, obviously has accrued some usage as well. But, you know, given some of his injury history, I wonder if they're just kind of like aligning around in Russ book or Russ book in Russell Westbrook's gravity, you know, like they're his moons and he's kind of the main celestial body there, and he's just going to kind of keep being a tour de force with just like better people to occasionally pass to. That's what I'm picturing going into this season. All this to say, I'd still be happy to play Westbrook. I would be pretty hesitant to run out Anthony or Paul George until I saw more from them. That's kind of where I'm landing right now with this team. And then the other guys, like, you know, Roberson, already a really low usage guy. Hard to see this helping him very much. And likewise with Adams. I mean, Adams can get it done, you know, with putbacks and rebounds and blocks and that kind of thing. And, you know, he might round out into a reasonable fantasy commodity as the season progresses. But yeah, as of right now, I am kind of like Westbrook feels good. And then everyone else, I'm hoping to wait and see, although that might not be a reality on such a short slate.
Yeah, it'll be interesting. I mean, Melo shot a lot in the preseason. It's just again, it's the preseason, so I don't make any change from it. Even with Durant, well, see, it's funny about with the Durant and Westbrook thing. They always did a bad job. Scottie Brooks always did a bad job of staggering their minutes, which never made a ton of sense. Like, it'll be interesting. I mean, obviously, with Donovan here, you're going to see minutes staggered because you have these three guys and you have a bench that's a lot shorter now that they had to get rid of. You know, they got rid of McDermott, Cantor, Oladipo, and Sabonis. And while none of those guys on their own are all that good, having all four of them being able to come in and just like play some minutes is a thing you kind of do need as an NBA team. They did sign Patrick Patterson in the offseason. That's definitely a bench upgrade, especially as a wing player coming in. But the rest of their bench is really thin. I think you're going to see a lot of minutes out of these three guys for like basically the whole season. I think they're just going to need to play them. They have huge downgrades at basically every position. And if you think that's the case, like if you think they're going to all trend toward like this 34, 35 or higher minutes per night, which I think is reasonable, I think you do have high fantasy floors on all of them, even with them all existing in the same atmosphere as each other. So
Yeah, I think that makes some sense. I guess like the concern I have about Melo and George is that they do effectively play the same position defensively, and it's going to be hard. Like if they run up against a team with two legitimate bigs, it's going to be, and that team, by the way, is not the Knicks necessarily, but even like Porzingis, like if Porzingis and Hernan Gomez are both on the court at the same time, it's hard to figure out who's going to cover whom, right? Like Melo can't cover Porzingis, so you have to put Steven Adams on him, and then like Melo can't cover Hernan Gomez, and neither can Paul George. So I think that we will see them pick somebody out of the George and Melo group to get more minutes. I would suspect it will be George, just because I think he's younger, better player in general, better part in his career. But I don't think either of those guys, given their track record. I know George has come out in the past and been like, "I don't want to defend power forwards. That's just like not what I want to do." And given, if maybe they change that, maybe they talk to everybody beforehand and everyone's on board now. But it's going to be hard on those guys that are already a little bit injury prone to take that kind of beating down in the paint that they're not used to. So I'm definitely going to wait and see on them. And just also, 8,000 for Melo already feels kind of expensive. Revenge game hashtag against the Knicks. So I bet people will play him. I just don't know if it's where I want to land personally.
No, I don't think either of them are values per se. More just commenting about how I just see there are some of their
Sure.
offensive and like minutes lining up as the season goes on. I don't want to take a stab at either one going in. I'd rather just take savings elsewhere, pay for Westbrook. I don't see even with usage stuff being cut in by I think Anthony more than George. I think Westbrook is still a relative bargain here. I don't think getting away from him in cash games makes any kind of sense. And I don't see really the rest of it. I mean, Adams probably just doesn't, he's probably stopped scoring altogether. He was never a big scorer anyway, but I don't think he and Roberson aren't going to see a shot in
No,
this
fair.
offense with those other three guys on the court. Last game on the slate, we have a LA matchup here. Clippers, well, quote unquote, going in to face the Lakers. They're all playing at the same place, but it's technically a Laker home game. Interesting stuff here for both teams. Obviously the Clippers leave, or they get rid of Chris Paul in the offseason, bring in Patrick Beverley and Lou Williams and Sam Decker in that trade that sent Paul to the Rockets. And then the Lakers, Lonzo Ball, much ballyhooed prospect here. Probably, I mean, it's a shame that his dad garners so much of the attention because, by all accounts, Lonzo is just the exact opposite of what LeVar is. But a lot of hype coming in with that Lakers team. Let's start on the Clippers side. No Paul here. This seems like it turns over to be Blake's team. How do you see Patrick Beverley fitting in with this system that was a lot of pick and roll with Paul, a lot of ball handling? I mean, Paul was just such a ball hog, basically. I mean, he had a ton of assists, but ball hog in the sense that he just controlled so much of the action.
Yeah, one of the leaders in time of possession. And Beverly, this is kind of a strange situation for Beverly because we've actually just never, I mean, he played alongside of one of those guys in Harden in Houston and was kind of a point guard in name only, a Pino Doug, but as he goes to LA, they really don't have another ball handler, that jumps out obviously to me. I mean, they've got like Austin Rivers, I guess, but this is not a really a team that he can slot into that 3-and-D sort of role. So I think that he will be handling the ball quite a bit. And I think if he does, we're getting him at a pretty significant steal here. I think, he's sustained prices in this range just based on his ability to drain the threes and get steals and, put in the odd bucket or two. I think that if he winds up playing the low 30s minutes that I personally project him to, I think we'll see a slightly increased role in the offense from what he had in Houston. And I think, it's not so hard to pile up assists with guys like Blake and DeAndre, who are just great finishers around the rim. So I'm very high on Beverly to start this season. I think it's actually, I wouldn't want to play him, I don't think, like on last night's slate. I don't think he has that level of safety. But given some of the other options at point guard tonight, as you go down through these names, you're going to be kissing a lot of frogs. And I don't mind just running Beverly out there as a cheap way to pay up elsewhere.
No, for sure. He's great. I think he's a great FanDuel play. He's just a good play on both sites. They do have Milos Teodosic, who people do like going forward. I think they like the hair more than anything else. But I don't think he's.
Fine. Yeah, they can like him. I'm not gonna project any usage from
No.
Beverly.
I'm just saying, as a guy who might cut into some of his ball handling minutes, that's all.
Yeah.
I still think Beverly is mid to low 30s minutes at minimum. And he's also greatly helped by the new FanDuel defensive scoring as well, where obviously he's a defensive ball hawk. Adding the steals in as an extra point really helps him. At 5,400, I think that he probably is another chalk play tonight. Although, I mean, I guess maybe people might try to talk themselves into Lonzo or some of these other, like the Lowry types. But I think for me, it would be Beverly. I forgot to mention they also signed Danilo Gallinari in the offseason to play the three. It's an interesting signing, I think, for them at least, from being able to stretch the court a little bit. They always It's funny. Danilo is like the exact guy they were missing when they had Paul, which was like this kind of corner three guy who could shoot, guy kind of type that they really needed there. And they get him now that they don't have Chris Paul anymore, which I find interesting. Other guys, like, where do you see Blake's usage in this thing? He was already a decent kind of usage guy with Paul on those pick and pops. Do you see him having the same sort of style with Beverly? Do you see him like kind of just taking over some of like the facilitation duties here as like that point power forward type that we're seeing some of these teams?
Oh, I think he instantly goes back. Like, this price is way too low in my mind. I think he instantly goes back over a $10,000 player. I think they will run the offense through him at the top of the post. And I think that he will, be both a facilitator, you know, passing DeAndre, kicking out wide to their 3-point shooters. I think you could see a lot of possessions start with just Beverly bouncing the ball up, giving the ball to Blake at the foul line, and then kind of chilling on the 3-point line too. So yeah, Blake, great price. Kind of a must play for me tonight, I would think. I think he'll be hugely played across the industry, and great matchup with the Lakers too. We haven't even talked about the matchup here. So yeah, Blake, fantastic play in this game and probably the next couple if the price stays where it is.
Yep, I completely agree. I actually like the makeup of this Clippers team. I think it's pretty well suited to be around like what DeAndre and Blake have. And so I like I don't like that they got rid of Paul. I do like kind of the pieces they have, these auxiliary pieces that are just going to make up some of the difference. They're not going to be as good. And I completely agree with you that we're probably buying low on Blake, because I think we're going to see just a significant bump in terms of like his production over what he was playing. He was kind of playing hurt last year at times too. So if we think he's fully healthy on this team, getting to 10,000 at power forward doesn't seem out of the realm of possibility. You mentioned the Lakers. Why do you think, I mean, I kind of know the reason, but those that are new to this, why are the Lakers sort of like the perfect DFS matchup that we're looking for on a night-to-night basis?
Yeah, they play fast. They play bad defense. In particular, the interior, like guys like Randall, pretty decent, probably could be a good defender someday, but the head's not really there yet. And they've just been torched. There's really no other way to say it. The Clippers have historically, with very similar squads, I mean, obviously Paul's not there, but historically torched them too. It doesn't really matter who they throw at from the spot too. Like, they could throw out, I don't know, Larry Nance, doesn't make any difference. I guess they have Bogut now, but Bogut's never been able to play more than 20 minutes a game. Ivica Zubac, you know, another guy with interesting offensive upside, but just not really there in terms of the defensive game just yet. So and then Brook Lopez can't cover Blake either. So Brook Lopez anchored almost an identical, if even worse, defense in Brooklyn of the old play fast, play bad defense crew. So yeah, from top to bottom, their bigs are just poor. So I think just a great spot for both DeAndre and Blake here.
And with Lonzo Ball, the theory is going to be that they're going to push the pace even more with him than they have in the past, which is going to make him even better to play, just to kind of slot in guys against the Lakers. So it's good that some of these teams, Phoenix, Lakers, Nets, all kind of maintain their fast, bad play, which makes it, at least from a projection standpoint, a little bit easier. Other guys I think are worth note here, well, a couple news notes here. Lakers have actually not said who their starting five is going to be right now. It could be Larry Nance over Randall. I'm not sure it would matter for me too much one way or the other. Neither guy has been a huge minute guy in the past, no matter what their role has been. That's just not the way Luke Walton has played his rotations, at least among the big. So even if Nance were to draw the start, I wouldn't slot him into like a 31-minute role. That's just not where Walton and company really want to land. Reminder to everyone here, the basketball draft is still set up the same way this year as it was last year and all the previous years. Teams like Lakers do not want to win, right? Like, they're smart. Their future is not now. And so when you have these teams that are playing for draft picks, it is going to be very difficult to project out minutes for them, anything in the realm of what you would get out of a good team, right? Like, so Lonzo Ball might be their best player. It doesn't mean he's going to play 35 minutes a game, because they do not want to win. So for the uninitiated,
well, just look what the Lakers did in the past. I mean, look what they did with D'Angelo Russell and Julius Randle when they were actively just playing significantly worse chuckers, just terrible players, in order to not win. So that's, I think, a very, very good thing to point out, especially given the ball isn't exactly cheap at this point.
Exactly. So just as a note, is why some people ask, like, why are we so low on some of these like guys who are good minutes? Well, this is why. It's not them. It's their team, and their team doesn't want to win. So other guys, Brandon Ingram, he bulked up in the offseason. Yeah, he can take more of a role in the offense. He's also not very cheap. They had time to price correct on him. He was a guy that we were playing sort of in that $4,500 range last year. The price has come up there, so I don't know. This Lakers team is just weird. I just get weird. Like I said, I get weirded out about the minutes, because when teams don't want to win, It makes projecting them very, very difficult. All right, I think that's it for us today. I think we did a lot of talking here about a small three-game slate of basketball. We'll be back again tomorrow talking a full Friday in the NBA. DFSR.com/NBA will get you a free three-day trial to our projection system powered by Lineup Lab. Go check that out. Free for 3 days and for a short time, $29.95 a month after that. But the price is going to go up. So go check it out, DFSR.com/NBA. Buddy, talk to you again tomorrow, full Friday in basketball.